welcome to Can Queer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
My name is Sebastian.
And we are thrilled. We've actually started a bit later than usual because we've been having such a great time catching up and chatting with our incredible guest today, Drake Jensen. Thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome. Pleasure to be here.
Now, one of the things that inspired the conversation, one of the things that inspired bringing you on was the release of your new track, Talk Me Down. I think it's a great track. I think it's a very, actually, I'll talk more about it when we play it in a few moments.
Mm-hmm.
I'll sort of introduce the track and you can introduce the track.
Sure.
But before we get into that, let's talk about something in line with our show. We always start off on a bit of a lighter topic. So I'm going to start off about the coronavirus.
Okay.
Which I'm sure everyone's heard about. Everyone's stocked up on tins of tuna. And the coronavirus has reached the gay world.
Oh.
And the way coronavirus has reached the gay world, obviously, as our many our listeners know, that in China and then Japan and South Korea, when there was a massive outbreak of the virus, they've locked cities down, locked entire regions
Yeah,
down.
Yeah.
In the Venetian, large public gatherings are being curtailed, you know, all over the world almost as the coronavirus continues to spread.
Mm-hmm.
Which brings me to Eurovision.
Mm.
Our regular listeners know that we here are massive Eurovision fans.
Yeah.
And apparently they may be just streaming it only. Like, not necessarily having the big,
no gathering,
massive
festival.
It's going to be a series of music videos, basically.
Yeah.
That's not Eurovision.
That's not Eurovision.
Yeah.
I mean, it makes sense, because there's been an outbreak in Italy.
Italy, yeah.
There is, it's taking place now in the Netherlands, not Amsterdam, one of their other big cities, I forget the name of.
The Hague?
I think it might be The Hague.
Gouda?
It's The Hague. No, I think it's The Hague.
It's The Hague?
Yeah,
I've been to The Hague. It's lovely.
Yeah.
They every year they have hundreds of tourist deaths from the streetcars because the brakes are in the stations, not in the vehicles.
And people in Ottawa are complaining about allergies.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's just it's an accepted part of life that people are going to be like, oh, it's going to stop for me. It's a 2-ton vehicle. It's not stopping.
I was talking to a friend of mine from Liverpool, Nova Scotia, one of the stations that carries our show.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a famous lighthouse down in that area.
Peggy's Cove.
Peggy's Cove.
Okay.
And apparently,
well, you remember I'm a Nova Scotian.
Yep. You grew up in Glace Bay.
I grew up in Glace Bay, Nova Scotia.
And apparently there's signs everywhere, hundreds of signs.
Peggy's Cove.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Saying, don't stand on the rocks.
Stay away from the rocks.
Stay away from the rocks.
Yeah.
Because the thing called the tide comes in.
Yeah.
It does go back out again.
Yeah.
But it comes in, and apparently they have like dozens, droves of tourist deaths every year as people fall off the rocks.
And it's weird the way that I'll admit I'm yet to be to the East Coast, but I do know that the tide there behaves differently, that it moves like it's late for an appointment.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas, sort of like the fog in San Francisco
has
places to be. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Whereas usually, like, the tide is like this nice gentle thing where the waves just go in little by little. But like Cape Breton, famously, it's just like, got somewhere to be, whoop, in it goes, whoop, out it goes.
I don't know, I think...
Yeah, it's very aggressive.
Yeah.
I think a lot of Canadians, especially, I say this as a fact, because a lot of Canadians are in the GTA, like, numerically.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot
like
of
a
them
quarter
are there.
Of them or something. Yeah.
And the Great Lakes are, you know, the tide is barely a thing. It's just a swooshing of the water.
It has more to do with current direction than it does.
I grew up on the coast of South Wales, which was a relatively sheltered coast because of Ireland being kind of in the way.
Cape Breton-like.
Mm. Yeah. But, you know, the tide there would come in. But we had where I lived was a really flat piece of sand. So you would sometimes see the tide almost a mile out. And just like sand and
you could
mud and
it's
stuff.
It's like home,
yeah.
You can walk for like a mile and still not be in water.
Yeah. And then when the tide comes back in, you drown.
You better be careful.
Just something that seafaring folk pick up on the way. I don't know how we got into this.
Yeah, we were talking about Eurovision. One of the fun things about Eurovision, though, is whenever they pan over the audience, having the two of us like looking at all the flags that are getting waved and be like, wait a minute, that's a separatist flag from...
Or the Basque region of Spain. And we all do a little cheer. We take a shot if we see a Canada flag. And
I'll come in to watch your event.
A flag it's that isn't so much meant fun. To be there. Yeah. In the past few years, we've had like house parties where we invite over, and it usually just ends up being Luke and I getting drunk on gin.
You're never invited.
As we watch, we will now.
We will now. But then last year for my birthday, actually, we rewatched Eurovision 2016, which was a vintage year. A bunch of people
nice
came over.
Notes of
when did
opera.
Conchita win? When did
she was 2013.
Because that was really cool.
Yeah, Conchita first.
Yeah. I'm a fan, and I've seen Conchita online. And what kind of brings me into this is that she's been very expressed, or they are very, very vocal about, you know, the fact that she's really, really tried after Eurovision to maintain relevancy, which is very difficult for LGBTQ artists.
Mm.
It's very difficult for Eurovision artists.
It is. Well, of course. I mean, we know that there's a couple of Eurovision success stories, and one of them being the biggest band in the world, ABBA. But for her, and she's always talking about her own relevancy and looking for outside reinforcement of her relevancy. And I felt really bad. Some of these Eurovision artists kind of flash in the pan, like a lot of the American Idol artists.
Kelly Clarkson
and Carrie Underwood.
They're the survivors. She was Idol?
Yeah. But they're the survivors.
Everybody remembers the Sunstroke Project.
Okay, so I don't know what that is.
No. Clearly you're the only one that remembers.
Yeah. Sunstroke Project is the Moldovan entry with the epic sax guy.
Oh, sax. Put a sax in anything.
Because they also came back last year. So Sunstroke Project has been in there twice. So
it was the epic sax meme.
Yeah.
Actually comes out of a Eurovision entry.
And that was like 2011 when it was first in there.
It was great.
So it was like an 8-year difference.
Romania and Moldova give amazing. But this is
they never win, but they always have, and Spain as well.
Spain, cheerful, really entertaining.
They just send out people who have a good time. They know they're not going to win. They don't care. They're just there to have fun.
They're like the Toronto Maple Leafs. But always, it's not always about top winning. Five.
No, yeah.
It's not about, I've never won anything either. Yeah. I think I got one award in my whole.
But to circle back to why coronavirus makes us sad, is it sounds like they're banning the performances, and half of the entertainment of Eurovision isn't necessarily the music videos, which are very produced and often have a message to say, but it's the synchronized dancing, it's the stage banter,
the pyrotechnics, it's
the pyrotechnic, it's stage design.
2016, the Russian guy
climbed up
A hologram.
He
stood
stage.
On top of a hologram. And I remember when we were watching it, I was like, what stage magician did they get to organize
but
this?
But you know what? For our listeners' sake, what you often see is Eurovision pushing the envelope on stagecraft.
Yeah.
And then you would see it come up in an Adele concert, in a Kanye West concert.
Right. Because everything is just a reinvention of everything else.
Yeah.
Right?
But they really test out crazy stage design.
Genuine innovation.
And the outfits. Yeah.
Very cool.
Like,
I'm a little hung up on the party. When's the party?
I know. Well, it comes out in May. April, May.
So what are we drinking?
I mean, all of that is the same. I mean, it is. There is considerations here because it will not be the same show.
No.
Because, you know, it's definitely a big part of Eurovision is the music
and making
it's the
fun of it.
It's the
so corny.
It's a satire of itself. Yeah. It is the world's largest singing competition, and it is live streamed in or broadcast in China, Russia, all over the place.
And it's amazing the split between people who have self awareness and people who don't.
So my issue with this whole thing now is that you're going to invite me to the party on the year.
Absolutely,
that it's going to suck.
Well, I hope not. I hope not.
We could watch a vintage year.
We could put a vintage year on and
we could bounce back and forth and compare it and then do a show on
it. We could watch the year that ABBA won.
Actually, every year
I watch it all the time.
Every year after Eurovision, the following week. We focus our show all about Eurovision.
Yeah.
So our listeners will get a taste of it.
Eurovision, because
you guys are really cool.
It has
to be on the show all the time.
There's weird geopolitics involved.
Yeah. Actually, there was an entry, somebody from, I think it won, but they want to do a song that's called I'm Gay. The song is.
Oh, okay.
I wasn't just randomly coming out. No, it's they want to do the song I'm Gay. That's what they want to go out with because they know that being that it's broadcast in China and Russia and a lot of other countries.
Where it's going to get censored.
You know,
like,
will it get censored?
Rocketman got censored.
I just looked it up.
Norway.
Yeah.
Well,
and the UK has announced their entry. So we'll play a couple of them in the next few weeks. Okay. Some of these early release.
I limit it because he just wants to play Eurovision starting in January.
Yeah, when the first song comes out, I'm like, ooh.
Can we
yeah.
limit it a little bit?
Well, yeah. I'm kind of interested because, I mean, I followed a bit of Eurovision, of course, when Conchita won. And, mm-hmm. and of course, I loved it because I've always known ABBA and I didn't really mm-hmm. know the whole history until I got older and researched it. Because you got to remember, when I was a teenager and in my early 20s, there was no YouTube to go to find out where this stuff came from.
Yeah, right. And Eurovision, for the first time, has been broadcast on Omni TV, which is the Rogers TV community TV channel.
So it's getting a little.
Let's move on from Eurovision.
Should we take a break?
Yeah, we shall. We're gonna play. We're gonna be playing the first song by yourself.
Oh.
And I think
I like it with you.
We what we'll do is I think it transitions really well into the sort of subject matter sure. when we come back from the song.
Yeah.
So this is "Talk Me Down" by Drake Jensen, who's our special guest.
Good idea. Just to hear your voice again. You don't know how bad I want it. Lord, I need to clear my head before I do something I regret. If I had one wish on a night like this, I'd wish for a guardian angel to pull me back from the ledge. Standing on the edge of a memory that's just too painful. Before I head straight. If I had one wish on a night like this, I'd wish for a guardian angel to pull me back from the ledge. I'm standing on the edge of a memory that's just too painful. Before I head straight for the ground, somebody please talk me down.
Welcome back to Can Queer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is still Luke Smith.
I am Sebastian.
And we still have the incredible Drake Jensen with us. We just heard Talk Me Down. What was that song about?
So that song came to me, like I recorded a song from a friend of mine who writes in Nashville. His name is Matt Ullman. And Matt had written When It Hurts Like That. And he had also written Talk Me Down with another gentleman from Toronto. And his name is escaping me. Sorry. So anyway, this song came after. It was kind of like a follow-up to When It Hurts Like That. But the song itself, I mean, it can be interpreted many ways. But when I heard it, because I think as an artist, when you hear a song that somebody else has written and you have to try to identify with it to record it, mm-hmm. I think that you have to find your own meaning in it. And I think when you listen to the song lyrically and listen to it lightly, I think you would think it was about somebody in a relationship and they're broken from that relationship and they just can't, you know, they're always up and they can't come down. What I got out of it more was the mental illness aspect of the message of the song and how many of us are at that level all the time and find it really hard to get back down. And so we filmed the video on the top of a building, and it was just one of those things. And it really, that song was like, it was like On My Way to Finding You that I'd done before, previously, that people really started to identify with. And I think it wasn't the relationship thing so much, because we know that there's not that many relationships existing in the gay community anymore. But what people were identifying with was, you know, we have all these problems like loneliness and feelings of alienation in the gay community.
Yeah.
And that's why they identified with it.
You know, before I move into that, because that's, I think, going to be the sort of bread and butter of this next section. I really like this song. We're going to be playing in a little while on My Way to Finding You, which is a song you mentioned. We'll be playing out with that, and I'll explain why at the end of the show. But I feel like this song is very modern. It's strikingly different from some of your other work. And it's just, I feel like it's the kind of song that would be at home on any radio station. Was, even though it's serious subject matter, it was kind of, it's a lively song.
It's very edgy and very raw.
Yeah.
And I think the production value was really good on that song. I think it was probably heavier than anything I've ever done as far as guitar-wise. We just went out on a limb and didn't really care about where it was going to be played. We just wanted to create something that we liked. Mm-hmm. And I think this has been the new direction. I work with Jonathan Edwards here in Ottawa, and I think that between the two of us, him and I are basically the bones of the music. And lately we've been deciding just to do things that we like. And I think that's probably, that song was the beginning of that, of what's happening right now. So it's a really, really exciting time where the music is really changing.
You have a record that's coming out soonish?
I think by the summer, like, so the records, we're about halfway through, and the record is a Canadian cover record. So it's got like stuff like Gordon Lightfoot on it, and it's got Leonard Cohen on it and Bruce Colburn and all this really embedded, like, incredibly well-written Canadian music.
Now, I find, and it's funny because we had brunch earlier, and you said, "Wow, we can be vicious." What's that famous gay Canadian singer?
Oh, Rufus Wainwright.
Rufus Wainwright.
Oh yeah.
A lot of gay music sounds like Rufus Wainwright.
Yeah.
Like really slow, really down tempo.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm always thinking,
kind of like Jen Arden.
Yeah. Will it sound good on the radio?
So my feeling about this is I hate live albums, and I'm disappointed with Jan Arden, but those two combine to make a perfect storm where I only like Jan Arden's live albums because she feeds off the audience and she's amazing.
I'm very much like that.
But there is actually one Canadian artist who plays off the dirgy sad sound that is sort of associated with gay men, and that's the Hidden Cameras.
Yeah.
They kind of make fun of it while also doing it.
Mm-hmm. But you see, we keep an eye out for emerging artists. Mm-hmm. We always want to promote emerging LGBT artists. And there's so often their new music is, you know, Rufus Wainwright of 2020. And it's like, you know what? Mm-hmm. This is a really slow song. I think the difference between Talk Me Down and some of the other music that we don't play on our show is that I often find that some of those songs can be self-indulgent. It's like, here's me working through my feelings, and you have to listen to me. And it's almost unbearable. Whereas this one was a really great song and had very, it was easy to connect with the lyrics and understand it. Like, you know, as a song, it was able to capture that. I don't know if I'm just like bad-mouthing Rufus Wainwright.
I don't know. I mean, there's a place for like that.
Yeah.
There's a place for Rufus Wainwright. And so that's a reason people always ask me, well, why don't you write all of your own stuff? Because I do write some of my own stuff.
Yeah.
And I do have a dance song coming out that I just wrote.
Nice.
But the reason why I don't write my own stuff, because it would be Rufus Wainwright. No, it would be. It would be. Yeah, yeah. That's what I would do. Because I've had a very, very sordid past. Everything that will come out is probably going to be like that. And I'm going to do a record like that. I think there's going to be a record like that. And I think it's time and place, but I always pick songs based on not only a self-indulgency of my own psyche. I always try to pick songs based on what other people can relate to. Because inevitably, if you want to create music...
I mean, there's a way to split the difference.
I mean, like, I think Adele.
About loneliness and isolation to an upbeat beat.
Yep.
So one would be Wanna Dance With Somebody by Whitney Houston.
Okay. Yes.
And Dancing On My Own by Robin.
Yes.
They're both Robin. About loneliness and isolation. But
don't you love that song?
Fantastic yeah. dance hits.
That song is killer. That Robin, she's amazing.
I like Do It Again a little bit better.
There was a study that came out. And Sebastian, you looked into this study.
Yeah, I read as much as I could. It's on the APA PsychNet, so it should be public access, but I don't know. There's a problem going on in academics. Anyway, point being, it was a study on isolation and loneliness in the gay community, and they're actually trying to get at the root cause of it. And a lot of it has to do, well, they summarized it as being intra-community competition.
Okay. So that's gay men being competitive with other gay men.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But the way they phrased it, actually, that you have to be very careful about these things when you're looking at studies like this. They said that it was the perception of competition. So gay yeah. men perceive themselves as being in competition, and they perceive themselves as being on the losing end. Mm. So if they do not perceive themselves to be attractive enough or wealthy enough or the right kind of whatever, the right height, the right build, the right skin color, the right hair color, mm-hmm. whatever.
Yeah.
Body hair goes through trends, you know, in the 2000s, if you had hair below
your... We're now post-peak beard.
Yeah, we're post-peak beard. Yeah,
although your beard is fantastic.
But in the 90s and 2000s, if you had any hair below your eyebrows, you were a disgusting animal who needed uh-huh. to shave it off. So there, part of it is the 80-20 rule, and this is something that's true in most things. It's like design and marketing stands by the 80-20 rule. So that's 20% of the whatever get 80% of the whatever. Mm-hmm. So in this case, so the 80-20 rule in the context of the gay community would be something like if you were to talk about like sex and dating. So you get very successful people who get large amounts of something, and very unsuccessful people who get very little of something. And that also, there's economic things in there. So the Peter principle, where successful people leverage their success to get more success.
Yeah, money makes money.
Money makes money. Yeah. People want to date people who are already in a couple. So, I mean, the isolation issue, so yeah. going back to this article, right. was a lot of gay men perceive themselves as being on the outs.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
they sort of emotionally distance themselves and kind of give up on even trying.
But hookup culture in general and the new culture we have where we don't have a huge social life anymore. Mm-hmm. We don't have human connection anymore. Mm-hmm. We have an app that sets you up to be able to set up with this person and they show up at your door. So I think a lot of people are looking for contact.
I yeah. don't, yes, you're right. And I don't think, you know, the Huffington Post did the incredible piece on the epidemic of gay loneliness.
Yeah.
It's massive about, right now.
You know, yeah. And I think that part of it, and what I think, what I got out of this study that came out was, it's that perception, you know, you're thinking of dating, you see a guy and you're like, oh my God, he's such a beautiful twink, he won't see me, find me attractive. And like, I marvel every day that my partner Jake is still with me because he's beautiful and he's so twinky and
he's
he could like...
He's really spiky though.
Oh yeah, he's prickly than the pear, spiky. Like he is... And he never leaves the house. So, like, you know, but when we first started dating, I was like, oh my God, wow, how did I bag such an amazing guy? You know, he could do so much better than me. And it's that right there.
You really think that?
If I could put a pin in it, the he could do so much better than me is what I think plagues the gay community.
Of course, but that plagues, I think we can take the gay thing out of this. I think we can start to level the playing field and say a lot of people feel
I think that's true in general, but it yeah. seems to be ratcheted up to very high levels.
Because yeah. we're
it's amplified.
Yeah. Because let's face it, gay society in general is very superficial.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. And then there's the body image issues,
yeah.
Which I've had my whole life. I've had body image issues my whole life.
And we see that amplified even further for folks who are people of color, for indigenous folks, for people with body dysmorphia. Mm-hmm. You know, these are things that the he could do so much better than me yeah. becomes even more amplified.
Mm-hmm. It seems that
when you have these added criteria,
health and disability issues seem to be the category where that's the most. And it's not even necessarily visible ones. So like, you know, if you're a gay man in a community that's obsessed with butt stuff and you have colitis
yep.
or IBS or Crohn's disease, or celiacs, which is, all of these are on the rise. Not only that, but ironically, IBS is one of the most common health problems for games. Health problems as well. Like, this is something that also doesn't get talked about a lot. That, you know, if you have a sleep disorder, if you have, because there's also a lot of...
Because sleep apnea machines are terrible for kissing.
Well, also, if you have narcolepsy or some kind of neurologically based sleep disorder, sexual arousal can trigger that. So, I mean, there are a whole list of issues, and then people just sort of give up before they start.
Probably what I see more and more of, and I have friends that are, you know, younger than me. I have a demographic of friends that's very, very broad. Mm-hmm. And I think even my younger friends that are in their 30s are lonely, mm-hmm. which concerns me. And these friends are hooking up with a lot of people. These are actual people that are doing this. Yep. Statistics come from what actual people's behavior. Mm-hmm. And what's happening is this loneliness. And I said to one of my friends one day, I said, at what point, I said, are you going to consider like that this could actually become a relationship? Or are you going to look for a relationship? Because you are going to be mm-hmm. eventually one of these days 60 years old. And you are going to be one of these people that are online. This is another whole other ball of wax, is where you've got a 60-year-old online and they're constantly getting told they're ugly, they're too old, they're too fat, they're irrelevant. There's
gay death at 30, isn't it? Like, that's when you become invisible in the gay world. Or might be 25 now.
you got to remember, so you're talking to somebody who started a music career when I was 38 years old. And I managed to survive. I'm 50 now and I'm still going strong, coming out with one of my best records. I maintain myself as an inspiration to people my age. Mm-hmm. And I stand by that. I'm incredibly confident about myself and who I am. And I want to be that kind of person that's out there that's saying, whoa, hello. You know, mm-hmm. you can do anything you want to do. Don't let anybody tell you that age is a limit. Age is not a limitation.
Well, I think...
Well, maybe for Olympic gymnastics.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, maybe for that in hockey and stuff like that. Where your body actually fails after
a while.
Moving on a little bit from that, you know, visual. I think that... For me, this study makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
You know, what they were trying to get at is, what is it about gay men that makes suicide ideation 4 times more likely than the straight man? What is it that drives gay men's mental health further over the edge, mm-hmm. much quicker, at a much higher percentage rate than straight men?
So you're 40, I'll be 50, and you're...
29.
Okay, so we'll call it 30. Like, we've got...
Thank you. Almost, 30, 40, 50.
We've got almost two generation differences here, so...
Actually, I'm millennial. You say millennial.
I'm right on the edge. I'm the last Xer and the first millennial. Right on that edge.
I'm an X. Yeah. So I'll give you my standpoint of, like, why this has happened. I think a lot of gay men that are my age and maybe older have... mental issues and issues with self-identification of who they are, because they grew up with a culture where you dated a girl, you married a girl, like from my small town perspective, that's what I did. And then you go, not that I did this, I didn't. I was very loyal when I was married. I was loyal. That's how I was raised. But a lot of them, they went and had sex in bushes. So everything that was done in the bush and everything that was done in the drag, what they call the Fruit Loop in Sydney, Cape Breton, Nova Scotia, which was ironically, the military base down at home.
That's not ironic.
It was called the
Fruit Loop. That's historically consistent.
Called the Fruit Loop. That's what they called it. We would drive around there and guys would pick other guys up and you'd see married guys down there all the time. Yeah. So whatever you do in the dark and you do in the bush is bad. Now we've been... Our generation has been catapulted into a culture where not only are we trying to catch up to all of that, but we've also been told by the new millennial and the younger and the gens that we're irrelevant because we're cis, we're white, and we're too old. So now we're trying to not only catch up to what's actually happening in society, but we can't. Seemingly meet up to any of that expectation. So then what happens is you start to get mental degradation. You start to get mental illness.
Yeah. I mean, when I was younger, a lot of gay men weren't dating because people were still terrified of HIV. Like, that had a huge impact. Like, when I was younger, like, people have asked me, did you date older men when you were younger? And the answer is there were no older men. They were all either dead or closeted.
Yeah.
So, like, we were, like, maybe people about 4 years older than me were like the first generation of twinks to actually start going out again. Well, so it was
scary. We referenced a mutual friend, Jay Koonstra, And I think he said at one point, it's like three or four out of five friends would have died of HIV.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, it was, imagine, I want our listeners to think in their head of their five top friends and imagine three of them dying from a disease that could be prevented, but the government was turning a blind eye to, that was, you know, and it's, you know, the ripples, the impact for that, the intergenerational effect of this is things like older gay men dating younger gay men, because that generation in the middle
didn't exist.
Yeah.
And then the legacy of that is what we see now with intergenerational relationships. Like, the impact of HIV and AIDS in the gay community is still,
it's still so ongoing, huge.
And you talked about, like, in the bush and the Fruit Loops and the fear and the that was attached to that, and the secrecy attached to that, was partly attributed to the specter of HIV.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and all of that is, you know, 2 weeks ago we had the incredible Paul Monroe on the show,
mm-hmm.
who grew up in the 80s,
mm-hmm.
and he was married, wife, kids,
mm-hmm.
and he said, you know, coming out, was being gay, was not an option.
No.
It, you know, if you look at your array of options on the table, that wasn't on the table. It wasn't even in the same room.
Yeah.
You know?
It wasn't for me. It was the same thing.
I was one of two openly gay kids in my high school. Like, it was was still unsafe. I mean, I really shouldn't have come out when I did, technically. But, I mean, it was still unsafe. And I was, after I graduated, like, I heard that apparently 2 years after that, there's just a whole raft of them, because it just overnight all of a sudden it just changed, and it was really sudden.
I was gang beaten in grade 9. I was gang beaten by a gang of probably 40 people, you know, like a flash mob kind of setting.
That was in Glace Bay, Nova Scotia.
There was two people that perpetrated that and organized that, and it was boards, and it was about a half a mile it lasted for. Yeah, it really mentally broke me.
And, well, yeah, I would, yeah.
And I suffered, like, PTSD from it for a long time, and still do. And so I've dealt with all this stuff, and I think that, you know, from my perspective, that's what's always driven me, though. Mm-hmm. What's always driven me to continually do what I do, despite, you know, because I get a lot of backlash from the gay community because of what we're talking about
here. Yeah.
Because of that insecurity. So now I'm able to process it. I'm not angry about it anymore. I understand that when people backlash at me online, or they're angry with me, or they call me fat, or they tell me I can't sing, or whatever, because it happens all the time. And so I ask myself, like, where is that coming from? It's not coming from them knowing me. Mm. It's coming from something that they've experienced and how damaged they must be to perpetuate that upon somebody else. Mm. I mean, so I'm starting to have empathy for it more than I've ever had before. I think it's a coming of age thing for me.
Well, I know that, you know, when we had Paul Monroe on, we talked about how, you know, somebody coming out now, it is an incredibly personal experience to them.
Yeah.
But, you know, somebody coming out who was a teenager in the 80s with HIV, the epidemic, where the world was really against them.
Yeah.
If they came out now, such as Philip Schofield and some of the other ones,
also, you know, weirdly enough, the death of disco, it sounds like just this historical thing having to do with music, but the death of disco was actually harmful to the gay community as well.
Mm-hmm. It was a big social circle.
Yeah.
Well, I think, you know, it's, we'll get into some more of that. I picked a track by Orville Peck out of Vancouver with the track Queen of the Rodeo. Mm-hmm. He just put a new video out, which had a German indigenous drag queen out of Vancouver performing in the track. Check out the video. It's about 8 minutes long, the piece. We'll be playing the song, which isn't 8 minutes. and this is Queen of the Rodeo by Orville Peck, and we will be back just after this.
Sleek heroine, just a man, slow on the draw. Velvet gloves, you're still a stunner. Don't be down, girl, this world is a bummer. Queen of the rodeo, you rode on in with nowhere else to go. You know the tune, so the words don't matter. Beyond this town lies a life much sadder, babe. I know. another evening show. Queen of the rodeo. Sweet Marilyn, satin gown, hard to ignore. Starry eyed, a little younger. The night is long, your days are numbered. Queen of the rodeo. You're ridden out with nowhere else to go. You know the tune, so the words don't matter. Beyond this town lies a life much sadder, babe. I know. Another evening show. Down, girl, this world is a bummer. Queen of the rodeo. You rode on in with nowhere else to go. You know the tune, so the words don't matter. Beyond this town lies a life much sadder, baby.
Welcome back to CanQueer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is still Luke Smith.
I'm Sebastian.
And I'm Drake Jensen.
And before we wrap up for the day, I did want to talk a little bit about the song at the end, On My Way to Finding You. But the Village People have been forced to issue a statement. They have been forced. They could not ignore the demands any further.
Okay.
And it wasn't to clarify their ridiculous outfits. It was, in fact, because during Donald Trump, he was on stage in India, coming at a rally with Modi, the Prime Minister of Iran.
Why was he doing a rally
India.
In India?
Because he was visiting India. So there was a big rally.
Okay.
Yeah. And okay. The Indian people were just like having a great time.
Okay.
And they played Macho Man as he came out on stage. And everyone's been like, oh my God, how would the Village People, like these gay icons, you know, want Macho Man associated with a man such as Trump? You know, this is the same man whose Department of Justice this week have announced that they're backing a woman who is suing an entire state to not have to photograph a gay wedding. Like, that is the same president who even this week is backing legal efforts to legalize discrimination in the workplace. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he's not an LGBT ally whatsoever. Mm-hmm. So everyone's like, you know, why, you know, Village People, why are you, you know, allowing this man to play Macho Man at these conferences? Well, on Monday, they released the following statement. I will read it, and then folks can respond to it.
Okay.
We have received numerous requests demanding that we prevent or ban President Donald Trump's use of the songs, particularly the YMCA, or Macho Man. With the latest use of Macho Man in India, we are being inundated and can no longer remain silent. Since our music is not being used for a specific endorsement, the president's use is perfectly legal. He has remained respectful in the use of his songs and not cross the line, if he or any other candidate were to use any of our songs in a manner that would suggest endorsement or in a promotional advertisement that would cross the line. Like millions of Village People fans worldwide, the president and his supporters have shown a genuine like for our music. Our music is all-inclusive, and certainly everyone is entitled to do the YMCA dance, regardless of their political affiliation. Having said that, we certainly don't induce his use, as we prefer our music to be kept out of politics. So there we have it.
That's okay. They could have done better, but that's okay.
Very reasonable stance.
Yeah.
You know, I think this is important because I think it was Queen and a few other ones. I think you mentioned Queen.
Yeah.
That, you know, found out he's playing their songs at a rally and were like, we do not want to be associated with this man in any way. And having We Will Rock You, does that really associate Queen with the venue it's being played at? Or, you know, so they've pulled it. Elton John famously pulled it as well. You know,
all British artists.
Yeah.
You'd think
zero patience, sorry.
If he's going to go with Make American Great Again, you'd think he'd go with American
he's
musicians.
He's so local. Well,
British people. His clothes are made in China.
I mean, everything's made in China.
And his election's made in Russia. So, I mean.
Points for that one.
So, what do you think, as the artist in the room, what are your thoughts on those?
So, here's the thing. So, what are we doing at the moment with the Village People? What are we doing about them? What are we doing? We're talking about them, right? How many other radio stations and how many other LGBTQ people and how many other political people are talking about the Village People?
Mm-hmm.
So we're talking about, so what we struggle with these days, and me especially as an independent artist will attest to this, is one of the most difficult things to get these days is attention.
Mm-hmm.
And shock value attention. The kind of attention that makes people go, oh my God, I'm so angry about that.
Yeah, I am.
That's what's going to get you the most headway in the media. So the Village People, God bless their souls. I couldn't count the times I've dressed up like that leather guy. And I have the mustache so I could do it. But they're sitting there rubbing their hands together and going, we've given a very diplomatic
response. Yeah, and it's a great response.
Yeah. Okay, so it's a diplomatic response about music, because you have to remember, if you're not a political person in music, then music is for everybody. So you can't pull it from one person and say, you can't listen. It's out there.
Yeah, yeah.
When you put a work out there, it's out there. I have a problem with that, right? A lot of people say, oh, you can't, this can't do that. It's out there. So people are going to cover it. They're going to do whatever. They're going to put it on YouTube. They're going to download it. They're going to stream it, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So the Village People have given a great democratic response. We have an incredibly fiery, hot topic with the Trump administration and their anti-LGBTQ stances. And now we have one of our icon bands who are kind of sitting in the tepid water, sipping a margarita about the whole thing.
Sipping a cup of tea.
Right, really. Let's look at it. And they're getting a shit ton of media attention on this. You can't buy that kind of thing today.
You know, it's funny because the Village People famously had a reunion tour in the UK last year. And they went on Good Morning Britain, or one of the morning shows.
Wasn't there like only two of the original members?
Yeah,
surviving?
Yeah.
This was the backlash, and it was only the one guy that was left.
Yeah.
And it was, does it count as a reunion tour if it's you
no.
and four impersonators?
Yeah. It's a reinvention, right? I mean, it is what it is, but so many older bands that were in my era are reinventing and coming back.
A lot of their songs aren't relevant anymore, though, because, like, Fire Island, no one can afford to go there. They have a song about Key West, but that has been destroyed by hurricanes. And I actually listen to disco when I'm trying to work, so I'm very familiar with their catalog. And a lot of their stuff, it's, like, half the things they're singing about, like, this place is overpriced, that place was destroyed in an earthquake. Like, it's just, it's outdated. Like, it's like the Beach Boys talking about, like, teenagers living on the beach.
Which brings me back to my point, which says, you can't buy this kind of controversy.
Yeah.
When you create controversy, when you get people talking, you create relevancy, and you also create another forum for other people that haven't discovered the Village People's music. And you just saying all that stuff is going to make somebody go to Spotify.
what's that Key West song?
I want to hear that song. And they're going to listen to that. And guess what? The Village People are going to benefit from that 0.0003 cents you're going to get from Spotify. And which is also part of my point, that you need people talking about yourself.
Yeah,
you need
exactly.
people talking, and they've got it. Great diplomatic response. Would it be my response? Absolutely not. But that's the, you made a very good point, Sebastian. Mm. It's a person's right. If they've created an art out there and they say it's okay, music is music, music's for everybody, mm-hmm. that's a good point. Mm-hmm. My soapboxy kind of political stance on the I'm very anti-Trump would be to jump on and say, no, you're wrong, but you're right.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah. Now, we have reached the end of the show.
Yeah. No! If anything, I would say, do not check out The Village People. Just check out Lay All Your Love on Me by ABBA, which is my favorite song.
Go to my Spotify, because I have like 511 people that follow me.
Well, I mean, yeah, I should actually be promoting the guy who's sitting next to me.
Yeah, let's create some controversy.
Yes. Feel free to follow Drake Jensen on Spotify. Please.
I just started on Spotify, though.
So. And your various other social media. Actually, we're also on Spotify.
Yeah.
We have
less followers than you, so it's...
but we can build this.
Yes, yeah. You can keep up to date with all of our podcasts. We release them along with the show every week on mm-hmm. Spotify.
Awesome, that's great.
Now, we have reached the end of the show, mm-hmm. and we're going to be playing out with On My Way to Finding You, which was one of your first major breakthrough hits. And it was partly, you know, I think it was, you were saying that when you were recording the video, it was around the same time in Ottawa when Jamie Hubley, the young teen here, passed away from suicide. And that was the exact same inspiration that brought me and Sebastian together to create Three Gays on the Radio, which became Velvet Studio, which became Cam Queer. Because it kind of ties what helped bring your career forward and what's brought our career in community radio forward as well into a nice little bow.
Yeah, it's kind of a bittersweet thing with this whole Jamie Hubley thing. And you got to remember, there's a very strong tie for me with the family, because Alan is from Cape Breton.
Mm.
So when I contacted them, I had contacted them. We were making the video. I was planning to come out in country music. I wanted to be that rebel that would come out and say, I'm gay, and like it or not. Mm. And inevitably, it destroyed a commercial career. That's what it did. Completely destroyed any opportunity for me to get on major country festivals. I've been told that when I've applied for other things locally that, you know, we don't want a fag on our stage. Nobody wants to hear a fag in country music. I've heard that stuff. So beyond that, though, when I took the other path, I came out, we created the video. This happened with, unfortunately, it was terribly unfortunate circumstances with Jamie. And then I contacted the family. I said, would this be okay if I dedicated the video? And it was when this happened, we released the video. We got on a radio show in Knoxville, Tennessee. It was a drive home radio show at 5 o'clock.
Mm.
And I have all the clips, and people were calling in droves, and it made a ton of controversy. It killed my career in Nashville. Nobody would ever review me or touch a song that I ever did again. But it got me onto the Toll Road blog, and that's where my career started. So it spun off from that. And it was a bittersweet thing for it to happen for me. Like, really, it's always really sensitive spot for me because it's so close to home.
Mm.
And so it was one of those things. And so I decided to dedicate the video to him, and everything kind of spun off from there. But it was a song that was pitched to me on a disc in Nashville when I recorded my first record. And it was special to me because it meant something between me and my husband. He grew up on a farm, and it was a travel story to finding true love. And I couldn't have thought of anything better. Really, to dedicate it to Jamie Hubley.
I mean, I know for us, it was a case of, you know, there was a sense in Ottawa that the community had let him down in a way.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there was a lack of support, a lack of community there. And, you know, we leaned on your experience in Hamilton.
Yeah. This is my second radio show.
Okay. And it was the story of your former co-host,
yeah.
Who before he started, it was like, you know, I think it was the host before that even, would tell his parents, you know, I'm gonna go drive, practice my driving. You know, this was in the 90s maybe.
Yeah.
Gonna go practice my driving. So you would drive half a block, pull up in the local, you know, Circle K parking lot, and then tune in to the local station, CFMU maybe is the Hamilton one.
Queer Radio Hamilton.
And Queer Radio Hamilton, which is one of the longest running LGBT shows in the country.
Yeah.
And every week, clockwork, get in his car, drive half a block, park, and listen.
It was his only connection to his emerging identity. Yeah.
And that's really, you know.
That's really compelling, right?
And it's what's inspired us. You know, we're talking about Eurovision. And YMCA.
This is a real serious thing here. This is a serious thing.
Though. Well, that's one of the things that I push for in the show, is that we talk about the things that we talk about in daily life, that we don't always exclusively talk about being gay men, and we don't always exclusively talk about LGBT stuff. So talking about Eurovision, having these weird tangents about, I don't know, the history of the canals and everybody's Manchester.
Gay music being depressing.
Sorry.
Sorry, Rufus. But the thing about what happened after that video was released, so a lot of things changed. I got dropped off a playlist because I've gotten a lot of radio play on terrestrial radio in Canada. Mm-hmm. But what happened was a lot of them dropped me. There was places that wouldn't even interview me, didn't want anything to do with any of my new music. But what happened is Michael and I, who's my husband, who manages a lot of my personal career, we started to get a flood of emails from people, and we saved them all.
Mm.
We saved them all. And so if you could read the emails, like, I haven't been on the Country Music Awards, and I haven't been embraced by the Country Music Association of Ontario. Mm. I haven't been embraced by the Country Music Association of Canada. They never really have. And there's no demographic for us. There's no special category for LGBTQ mm-hmm. people, which we should have. But if I try to get that, they're going to say, the only reason you want it is just for you. Mm. But that's not.
It opens the door.
I always wanted to open that door.
Well, let us know. At Talk Can Queer is how you can find us on the Book of Faces and Twitter. And how can they reach you?
Call me. I'll give them my phone number. So I'm on Instagram as Drake Jensen Official. I'm on my official Facebook page is Drake Jensen Music. And you can also find me. I just started on Spotify, so that's why my Spotify numbers are low, because I'm terrible. But because I do a lot of my own media, but I'm on Spotify actually, and I don't even have all my music there yet, because that's how I'm on there.
Well, I want to just encourage folks who are listening, and maybe, you know, maybe the conversation with Eurovision wasn't the most inspiring, but maybe the show as a whole and your music as a whole helps open the door and get people thinking about it. Reach out to us. We always love listener feedback.
Mm-hmm.
We do hear a lot from Jake, from Sebastian's mum.
Yes.
So thank you, Sebastian's mum, for the feedback.
Yep, the mums.
But absolutely, you know, we love hearing what you folks have to say. But we've run out of time.
Yep.
I have been Luke Smith.
I have been Sebastian.
And I'm Greg Jensen.
And thank you for listening.
Thanks, guys.
Racing down the driveway on my bike, past the corn out in the fields and the blackbirds on the wires, with the dirt roads flying high beneath my stingray tires, down to the river on a summer afternoon. Just a farm boy running wild on my way to finding you. Down the hallways of my learning with my school friends, and on the playing fields where we all fought so hard, and then after graduation, in the real world and the bars, past the faces I was searching to fill the hunger in my heart, and on to the bottom of every dead-end road that I came to. I was a man on a mission, on my way to find. Finding you. blinded.